couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, we've got a movie about some big guys, maybe not fat guys. Well, Russell Crowe's a little fat. We have some movies to talk about, like Noah. We have Sabotage. We have Bad Words. We have Enemy. There are not a whole lot of female-driven movies out right now, at least this week. If you want that last week, you can go see Divergent. We also have some news, actually lots of news, and quite a few in the trailer park. We're bumping some of those later in the show as well. We've got four to cover. They've been dropping a ton of trailers for upcoming films that are worth noting. And then there's also going to be the DVD roundup at the very end. So hold on to your hats, because we're moving into the show. Before we get into all that, here's how to get a hold of me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and on facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. Finally, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr. I'm surprisingly available through Twitter, so you know, hey, give me a shout-out. Tweet at me. That kind of fun stuff.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Sounds like Ron Burgundy's tweeting at me, at least in his 70s or 80s version of the world. So let's move on into the news segment. The first story is an obituary, RIP, to James Reborn, who not a whole lot of people recognize his name. But a lot of people will recognize his face. He passed away at 65 after a long battle with some illness. And this guy has been in tons of movies and tons of television. He's one of those character actors. He's a famous this guy. I always remember him as the CIA guy from Independence Day. He was the guy who played the actor who plays the doctor on TV. I don't know whether he did that actual commercial from the 80s, but he was that kind of a guy. And he was in the movie The Game, playing an actor playing a doctor. So he was that guy. And it's a shame to see him go, because he was great to show up in all these movies. He was a very likable guy, very good presence on screen. We're going to miss him. The next one is somebody who I'm not going to miss. And although nobody's dead, I think her career might start to feel dead, because I think this may have alienated a lot of her fans. This is not necessarily the kind of story I always talk about on this show. I tend to lean more towards the big superhero movies and event films, but I have to point out this quote from Gwyneth Paltrow. Did you hear what she said? This woman is an amazing, colossal idiot. She was talking about her breakup with Chris Martin from Coldplay, and then she was in an interview with E! She talked about basically how her life, being a super rich celebrity mom with lots of nannies and childcare and availability and no worries about, you know, cash flow or finances at all, is actually harder than your average working parent. And here's her quote. This is the colossal moronic stupidity that Gwyneth Paltrow exhibits. Quote, "I think it's different when you have an office job because it's routine, you know. You can do all the stuff in the morning and then you can come home in the evening. When you're shooting a movie, they're like, we need you to go to Wisconsin for 2 weeks. And then you work 14 hours a day, and that's part of it. It's very difficult. I think to have a regular job and be a mom is not as, of course, there are real challenges, but it's not like being on set." I hope that every woman who is a mother and has a job boycotts Gwyneth Paltrow over this comment. This is shows the, you know, people talk about entitlement in politics and that sort of thing, and you know, the entitlement state. This is real entitlement. This is a woman who thinks her job of being flown first class around the country and being allowed to bring her kids in tow or leave them in a home with a nanny without worrying about childcare or finances is so much harder than working a regular job, getting up at 6 a.m., barely being able to eat your breakfast, getting your kids off to either school or daycare, whatever you're doing, especially if you're a single mom. Gwyneth Paltrow needs to be kicked in the face. This is such a stupid thing to say, and she believes it. And this is not the first time. This woman has a grand history of saying idiotic, moronic things about how her life is harder than your average person. I hope to God this woman loses her fortune somehow and actually has to go work at a crappy office job. Or if she had any ounce of dignity, she would do the undercover boss thing and go work in an office and see what it's like anonymously, because you don't want people going, oh, Gwenny's here. No, she needs to go live life in the real world like the rest of us, and then suddenly realize how blessed she is, because she's been blessed because her mom's Blythe Danner and her father was Bruce Paltrow. She grew up as a Hollywood elite. Gwyneth Paltrow is a colossal idiot. The next piece of news is it's just more or less a funny thing. This is why I don't talk about rumors all that much on this show. I prefer to talk about actual hard news about movies, of course. But there was a story, and it spread like wildfire over the internet, where Bradley Cooper is going to be in a reboot of Indiana Jones, that they're going to start making the movies like James Bond, where they're going to have a different actor come in every 10 years or so. And it just set the internet on fire. And my question was, what does this mean for the Harrison Ford Star Wars 7 provisions, where he said, I'll come back for Star Wars if you do more Indiana Jones? And then, like, within 24 hours, SlashFilm.com came out, and they said, well, we contacted higher-ups at Paramount, and they're like, no, that's absolute nonsense. That's not happening. So this is why I don't report rumors. I've had that. I've been asked that. What do you think about this casting rumor? Well, it's a rumor. And your report, and sometimes they're not even rumors. They're like reports on what you think the rumors might be. So that's why I don't, because these things turn around so quickly, and you know, it turns out that they're not true. And the final piece of news I want to talk about, Prometheus 2, is in the works. Ridley Scott's going to direct it. It's going to have a release date in 2016. And that also cheesed off a lot of people. I personally love Prometheus. It had its flaws. Don't get me wrong. It's got some big holes in it in terms of story and script. But I love Prometheus. I thought it was such a visionary, unique science fiction film. I look forward to a Prometheus 2. So there. Meh. Take that, Gwyneth Paltrow. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means we're going into the trailer park. Two real quick ones. One is coming out in May, very close to happening, just a couple months away. That is X-Men Days of Future Past. And this is showing sort of the sweeping changes and the sweeping scope of this new X-Men movie.
You'll need to go into the past to end this war before it ever begins.
Your power. Bring the X-Men together.
It's going to take the two of us side by side at the time when we couldn't be further apart.
Personally, I love the X-Men movies. I'm actually this weekend watching all the X-Men movies with my kids, all six of them. They also did cartoons, which are actually pretty interesting to watch. But I love the X-Men movies, and I think this one plays into the X-Men mythology of the movies. And it looks to me like what it's trying to do is patch some holes that the film series has that do not quite fit with the movie series. And there have been ups and downs. People, you know, they loved X-Men X2, but they hated, well, not people, but fans hated X-Men 3, and they hated the first Wolverine movie. So I'm really curious to see how this goes. This looks like it's going to be a neat movie. The next film I want to talk about is Edge of Tomorrow, which opens on June 6th. And this is the new Tom Cruise science fiction movie.
The invasion will fail. I die within 5 minutes of landing on that beach, along with every other soldier. What's happening to me?
What happened to you happened to me. You hijacked their power.
How do I control it?
You have to die. Every day. Keep coming here and I'll train you.
It does seem to draw a bit from some of the story of Oblivion, where he's waking up over and over again, kind of repeating things. But it looks like it's got some grand scope, and it's really reaching into the speculative fiction category. And that's, I think, what's neat about 2014. 2014 really looks like it's going to be shaping up as a neat year for science fiction, not just major releases. And I think I said this last week, but major releases like Edge of Tomorrow or Transcendence are getting these really looks like some really interesting movies. There's also some really cool stuff happening in the more independent side. Anyways, with that, I need to go to a break because we're over time. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking about Sabotage and Bad Words. Carr here with Fat Guys of the Movies, where I always appreciate and respect women who work, who are mothers, who take care of their kids, and also help or completely earn all the money for their family, unlike Gwyneth Paltrow, who likes to trample them with her Gucci high heels. And in honor of my reverence to working women, I'm going to be talking about two films that really have nothing to do with women, apparently. Don't blame me. This is Hollywood schedule. Let's roll into this first one. It's Sabotage. A dysfunctional DEA team is picked off one by one, which can be traced back to $10 million they stole from a drug cartel.
The arrest today of a major cartel leader has led to a seizure of millions of dollars in cartel money.
McNeely?
Something off. Oh my God.
I gotta ask you a few questions. $10 million is missing from your cartel bust. Did you steal it?
No.
Two murders of DEA agents have happened on my watch.
Why do you think the cartel's killing your guys?
What's funny about this is I mentioned this on the show because I played in the trailer park. This is actually loosely based on Agatha Christie's And Then There Were None, which in a sense they're both in English. I mean, it's the whole thing of somebody's picking off these people one by one. Not very closely related to Agatha Christie. It's really not even that much of a mystery. So if you've heard that, don't think, oh, my old mother or my grandmother loves watching Murder, She Wrote, and she watches PBS Mystery. Don't go take her to see this movie. This is an extremely violent film. It's directed by David Ayers, who did End of Watch. It's written by the people who did Training Day. So it comes from a long pedigree of gritty, violent, and sometimes uncomfortable cop films. The story itself is okay. The problem I have with this movie is it's so trying to be this hardcore, gritty, dirty, nobody's a real good guy character film. If you thought Dredd was not violent enough, you should see this movie, because this movie is nothing but massive gun and bloody violence to the point of excess and to the point of nauseam at times. I have no problem with violence in films. I mean, you can see a violent movie and it's appropriately rated R. And I don't think they're not marketing this film as something it's not. It's totally being marketed as this gritty, violent, bloody cop drama. The problem is they go so far with it, and the characters, this is the real problem on a film like this. The characters are not appealing. They're not even appealing in a gritty, I don't like them sort of way. You know, the way, say, people really enjoyed sort of the gray characters of, you know, Breaking Bad on television. These characters are just, they're horrible people. I mean, they're really, really horrible people. Even when they're good, even when they're at their best, they're horrible people. And I find a really difficult time having any sort of sympathy for them. And like Schwarzenegger's character, and I love Schwarzenegger. I liked his attempts of comeback last year with The Last Stand and Escape Plan, but of course nobody else did. But I think those really threw back to his 80s action. This one, even Schwarzenegger, who's meant to be the central figure as the good guy, and he even has a really tragic backstory where his wife and son were kidnapped and tortured and murdered by this cartel, and you're supposed to feel for him. But by the time you get to this point and you see how just sleazy everybody is, you really aren't rooting for him. And on top of it, there's a thing that action movies do. They're like the old Eddie Murphy action movies like Metro or even Beverly Hills Cop, where no amount of innocent life and personal property, all that is expendable in order to catch this one bad guy. And they take that to the extreme where they're trying to stop people and it's just overly violent and you know, people are getting killed left and right. And then when you sit there and think, you know, actually logically about why they're having this chase or whatever, and they're trying to kill somebody, and there's all this collateral damage. And when you think of the reasoning behind it, it really loses its water because it's inexcusable. It's a shoot 'em up that is just, it's too much. And even for me, and I'm not a prude, so it's too much. So I'm going to say this movie kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next one I want to talk about is Bad Words. Jason Bateman directs himself as a vindictive man who enters an eighth grade spelling bee to win the title.
Here I come.
The spelling bee is meant for kids.
Rule number 24, the speller must not have passed beyond the eighth grade on or before February 1st. You can see there, I have not passed the eighth grade, not ever.
Welcome everyone to the National Spelling Bee.
Hey, God.
Hey, Slumdog.
What are you doing up on the stage, weirdo?
Why, at the age of 40, have you decided to annoy educators, parents, and children by forcing your way into a kid's spelling bee?
There's huge differences between Bad Words and Sabotage, but at their core, there's the same reason I don't like either of the films, why I'm grading down on both of them. While Jason Bateman is not shooting around just riddling people with bullets and machine guns and shotgun fire, Jason Bateman is a talented guy, because what he can do as an actor is he can say some of the most horrible things, some of the most biting, sarcastic, and mean-spirited things. And he's very charming when he does so. It's hilarious to watch. And we see that in a lot of films where they will take him and put him in a context where he can say some really horrible things to somebody, and they're incredibly funny. Even like Identity Thief with him and Melissa McCarthy. Here's a guy whose identity has been stolen. And so he lashes out at Melissa McCarthy's character, and you're like, it's well-deserved. You know, all the things he says are incredibly mean, but they're well-deserved. And so those handful of scenes that are very funny in Identity Thief are examples of how Jason Bateman can just be mean and charming at the same time, and you can like him for doing it. Same thing with Horrible Bosses. He says some things in Horrible Bosses that are incredibly funny and well-deserved jabs at other people in the film. The problem with Bad Words is a lot of his ire and anger is misdirected at all the other contestants. So what you end up with is you end up with a movie for an hour. Jason Bateman is in there saying the most horrible things to these otherwise very innocent children at a spelling bee. And it's funny to watch in like a Saturday Night Live one sketch context. But the problem when you make a feature film is in the script, you at some point there's an urge to say, well, we need to get behind the characters, come to their side. And you want to relate to them. You want to feel sympathy for them. Unless you're going to do something that's specifically anti-hero-ish, at some point, it needs to be written in with a certain amount of heart. And that's where this movie breaks down. Because even when they try to give a reason why Jason Bateman's character is doing this, and you might say, well, that's justified, but it's not justified how you've treated this minefield of destruction of innocent people in your wake. And that's where I had a problem with it. I thought it was funny at times. Catherine Hahn's in it, and she's hilarious. And there's some really funny moments taken out of context. But as a whole film, it does not hold together because it is just so mean-spirited. And no amount of justification for his character doing this is excusable for what he actually does to otherwise innocent kids in the movie. And that's where I can't get behind that. I can't get behind somebody being just an a-hole for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And then say, oh, no, it's okay because he was, this happened to him. I'm like, well, it still doesn't matter. It doesn't excuse what he did to all these people going down the road. So, unfortunately, Bad Words also gets It kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
Next, we're going to be coming back with Noah and Enemy. So stay tuned for more Fat Guys in the Movies. We have a flood of movies to talk about here on Fat Guys at the Movies. See what I did there? Flood of movies. I'm sorry, was that a spoiler? Do I have to say that there's a spoiler alert that there's going to be a flood in Noah? Because it doesn't happen right away. And I generally like to say that you shouldn't spoil anything past the first act in a film. And in Noah, there is definitely a flood after the first act. spoiler alert. I apologize if I spoiled that for anybody. No, this is Kevin Carr with Fat Guys in the Movies. We're going to be talking about Noah. Darren Aronofsky directs, you could say, is this biblical epic about a man who builds an ark to save the world.
My father said that one day, if man continued in his ways, the Creator would annihilate this world.
Can it not be averted?
He speaks to you. You must trust that he speaks in a way that you can understand.
I saw water. Death by water. And I saw new life.
A great flood is coming. We build a vessel to survive the storm. We build an ark.
It's hard to actually talk about Noah, the movie, without talking about the religious and political context of the film as it was marketed. I got the sense early through 2014 that Paramount was trying to court the religious crowd for this because it's ostensibly a religious film. It's about Noah. And that was a mistake because this movie is not a literal translation of what happens in the Bible. In fact, if you go back to the Noah and the flood story in the Bible, I don't know when the last time a lot of you have read this, that story, it's like 2,500 words in verse in the Bible. It's not that long. I mean, it's like the length of a long newspaper article. It's something you can read in a single sitting. It's something you can read when you're taking your morning constitutional, or something you can read when you're on the commuter train and then move on to other things. I write movie reviews. My movie reviews tend to be about 600 words long. It's about three or four of them. It's not that long. There's not a whole lot of story there. The movie itself is over 2 hours. You can't make a 2 to 2.5 hour movie of 2,500 words in a book, especially with the way the Bible's written. And the Bible's a great book, but it's not exactly a page turner in terms of dialogue and character, especially back in the book of Genesis. A lot of Genesis is this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened. And he did this and he did that. And this person begat that person. And God said X, Y, Z, you know, and that's kind of how Genesis reads. So generally, if you are going to this movie expecting a movie that does not deviate from scripture, I don't know what you were thinking, because that's not what this movie is, and it never was. This is not like Son of God. Son of God, while I didn't like, because I thought it was poorly made, Son of God is at least in its own capacity trying to say, well, this happened. The Bible is almost to a fault saying it says this in the Bible, so we're going to do this. And it's a very clear-cut adaptation of the Bible. This is not that. It takes a lot of liberties, and it kind of goes really wackadoodle at times and completely bonkers, which is what's so interesting about it. I'd seen a quote where Glenn Beck had seen it. He was like, this was not the Noah movie I was hoping for. I'm like, what were you hoping for? Because if you got that literal interpretation, it'd be about 12 minutes long. It's not that long of a story. So they add a lot of stuff to it, and they get a little bit weird with it, but that's kind of neat. That's what I found so interesting about it. The first half is really amazing filmmaking from Darren Aronofsky. I mean, it's got vision, it's got scope, it kind of puts it almost in this superhero context. You've got giant rock creatures, which I don't remember those from the Bible, but okay. You know, and they change things around, and they don't have Noah walking around 500-600 years old making the ark. There's so much kind of really bizarre stuff that's seeded in that story that they go for different bizarre stuff in the movie. And he makes some incredibly interesting choices, which I was fascinated with. Like I said, up to the flood, I was on board. I thought it was a fantastic movie. It looks gorgeous. It has a real scope. It has some really neat interpretations of how the world might have been. It's showing it as a young world. It tries to put it in context a realization of why the entire world was wicked and this one guy and his family was righteous. It actually gives a little bit more than just saying, oh, the rest of the world was wicked. So when you realize that God's going to wipe the slate clean, you don't question and be like, well, what if there's like one nice guy in this village? You know, isn't that kind of unfair to him? Which is the questions you might have when you're reading Genesis. This movie is fantastic that way. Until the flood, And then it just completely falls apart. I mean, just unravels like a cheap suit. It is an absolute mess after the flood. And it never recovers from that. It never recovers. There's again some interesting interpretations of why Noah is doing what he's doing and how he's maybe not reading the signs right, but doing the right things in the very end. But it just goes off the rails and it never recovers and it gets very melodramatic and laughable at times. So it's the kind of movie it's two movies in one. The first half, brilliant, amazing filmmaking. The second half, absolute garbage. So it's a very conflicting movie, even within itself for myself. I'm still going to say it kind of rocks because it's interesting and it's different.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film we're going to be talking about is Enemy. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal playing a slovenly history teacher who discovers he has a doppelganger.
You are my only son?
I am your only mother.
He looks exactly like you. What's happening?
I really don't know what you're talking about.
I think you know.
Why'd you come looking for me?
I needed to know. I have some questions for you.
Who are you?
What's wrong? You're crazy.
I'm crazy!
This was a movie that kind of creeped up on me. I remember getting press releases about it for a while, telling me about screenings in other cities, not in the city where I live, but hearing about this. And I just was kind of on my radar as knowing it was a movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. And I got a chance to see it. It's directed by the guy who did Prisoners, which is, of course, Gyllenhaal's most recent film he did with Hugh Jackman back in the fall of 2013. And this is the best way I could describe this is it is Twilight Zone done for the art house crowd. It's very short on story, but it's got incredible depth. And it's got enough odd things happening throughout that you know it's not a completely 100% realistic movie. There's something in there to be interpreted. And I'm dancing around a lot of this because I don't want to say what happens, because if I start talking about what you can interpret, it's going to spoil things in it. And this is a movie that's best seen as cold as you can get, as fresh as you can be to go see this movie and say, okay, what's actually happening here? And there's a lot of cool things going on. Now, kind of like Noah, the beginning of it's really cool. Like in Enemy, the first two acts are really fascinating. And it's interesting to watch because it's this guy learning he's got this doppelganger, reaching out to this doppelganger, trying to figure out what it is and why this exists. And like I said, there's a lot of interpretation that you can do around this. Then in the third act, it completely falls apart, very similar to Noah. You know, in Noah, once he gets on the boat, it's done. You know, the arc is boring after that and ridiculous and stupid and melodramatic. Like this one, once they really sort of get past the what is going on, do I really have a doppelganger issue, it just falls apart. It turns into a kind of pointless exercise. But then when you get to the very end, it is such a bizarre ending that it redeems itself, because then you're going to spend the next 3 days trying to figure out what the heck happened in this movie. So Enemy it's in limited release right now. So you can check your local listings to try and find it. It should be on demand soon enough and on DVD and Blu-ray. Definitely worth checking out because it is unique and it's different and it'll give you something to think about, which is more than most films are going to do. So Enemy kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I am out of time for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about box office, some more movie news, a little more Trailer Park, and the DVD Roundup. Kevin Carr from Fat Guys of the Movies. with you on your weekend, ready to talk some more films. We're done talking about the new films for the week, but we've got some stuff on DVD to talk about. We've got some box office. How did things happen last week? How did things shake out? This is really interesting. You know what, like 300 Rise of an Empire did and Need for Speed, completely not interesting. But it was a really bizarre weekend because Divergent topped the weekend with about a little under 55 million, which was about what I said. I said it was going to be 50 million. And this is a good number, but it's not a fantastic number. We'll talk a little bit more about that. The unfortunate thing is Muppets Most Wanted kind of sunk a bit. It only made 17 million, which is a shame. And I just wish that the Muppet fervor hadn't have died down so quickly. I think it was a mistake for them to wait even just 2.5 years to do a Muppet sequel. The Muppet excitement has worn off a little bit. So it's a shame. I don't think we're going to get a third Muppet movie. If we do, it's all going to be direct-to-video, and we're back to where we were in the 90s with the Muppet movies, which is sad. God's Not Dead did surprisingly well at $9.2 million, which the reason I find that amazing is not has nothing to do with the context of the film, more out of the fact that I wasn't even on my radar. I'd heard about it, like, peripherally, but it wasn't even on my release schedule and my radar, and it came out, and it did extremely well. I didn't know that it was even playing until I went to go see a Thursday night show last week, and I'm like, hey, look, what's that movie? And then I saw a trailer for it where I got. So, I mean, you know, this is the great debate between atheism and faith, and if you're interested in that obviously taking a faith-based approach, it's something worth checking out. I think this week, Divergent is actually going to win. I think again this weekend, which is going to make it it's going to like win the weekend twice with some very soft numbers. And the reason I think it's going to win this weekend is because it just doesn't have strong competition. Sabotage is way too violent for anybody to see in a large mass mainstream setting. Noah, I think, is too polarizing. I think Paramount had a huge mistake by going after the biblical crowd because it's not a biblical movie. It's based on the Bible, but there's so many liberties taken with it. You weren't going to get the support of the biblical crowd. And then they also held it from screenings. They held screenings, I think, because, like I said, the last half is an absolute disaster. But at the very least, it's been getting good reviews and getting some positive spin simply because Aronofsky does some neat stuff. It was a mistake. Paramount should have screened it for press and should have said, you know what, we're going for the mainstream audience because it's a $160 million movie. And you can't make that up with just a faith-based audience. I mean, Passion of the Christ was an anomaly and also transcended standard faith-based audiences. Son of God did extremely well, but it's at $55 million. It's going to top out at less than $70 million total. And that would be a disaster for Noah. I think Noah's going to not do well. I just don't think it was mismarketed. The thing I want to talk about, though, is Divergent. And was the $55 million weekend actually good? Because nobody knows how to interpret this. Because Divergent is meant to be the next Hunger Games, and it's not. Harry Potter, Twilight, Hunger Games all had massive opening weekends. They ended up with massive grosses and massive worldwide grosses. Divergent is not playing like those in terms of the first movie in a series. The closest it would get is Twilight, but Twilight did way better than it in preview audience shows over the weekend. And you also got to remember when Twilight was coming out, all they had were midnight shows. And that was 5 years ago. Excuse me, that was 6 years ago. You have inflation to deal with as well. This is playing out more like Percy Jackson, the first Percy Jackson movie, which had a $31 million opening weekend and ended up with an $89 million gross. That's what you can expect from Divergent. Divergent is not going to even crack $150 million when all said and done. And it may do really well overseas. That's what's going to make or break it. If it matches that number overseas and can get like 300 plus million worldwide, it's going to warrant the sequel. It's already warranted the sequel. Here's the problem with Divergent. If you look at how the sequels went, the Twilight movies did better. The Hunger Game movies stayed on target, as did the Harry Potter movies. Percy Jackson 2 sank. Now, there was like 5 or 6 year gap between the Percy Jackson movies, and there's only going to be a 1 year gap between Divergent. But Divergent did not transcend its young adult audience and find other people. What's going to be a real shame for the audience that love this movie is if Divergent 2, which is Insurgent, doesn't do nearly as well. If it has a steep drop off or even just a slight decline, they may not make the third movie. They can always pull the plug. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a couple real quick trailers. I just want to throw these out there because there's tons. We wait for next week, but there's tons. And since we're talking about young adult books anyways, we've got two of those coming out in August and September. First of all is The Giver, which opens on August 14th.
What do you think would happen if you skipped your morning injection?
I cannot prepare you for what's going to happen.
There's something missing from our lives. Something that has been stolen.
When people have the freedom to choose, they choose wrong.
This one falls in line with that speculative fiction. It does have that Divergent feel to it, which is different than The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games, it still feels like it's not going to be a huge hit, but I don't think they're expecting it to with an August release. But it looks interesting. Jeff Bridges playing the dude again and Meryl Streep's in it. So you've got some good people behind it, more than just Kate Winslet. So yeah, The Giver, that should be an interesting one. The next one is The Maze Runner, and that opens on September 19th.
Can you tell me your name?
I can't remember anything.
Who put us here? We don't know. What's out there?
The maze.
Every morning when those doors open,
the runners look for a way out. And no one has ever survived a night in the maze.
What happens to them?
I'm interested in seeing this one, too. I think it's going to be a neat movie. It could be terrible. It has that potential with some of the dialogue and some of the delivery I've seen in the trailer. But what you're seeing now in these is a unique perspective on the survivalist futuristic movie. And you do have a danger of killing the golden goose with this. You do have a danger of over Hunger Gaming this whole thing. Hunger Games will survive through two more movies, but it may just become overdone with this sort of, you know, dystopian future. That's the danger with these movies. They got a whole bunch of them in the pipeline already. Let's catch up on a couple quick news items. Chris Evans is talking about quitting acting for directing after he finishes his Marvel contract as Captain America. He needs to sit down and commiserate with Gwyneth Paltrow about how difficult it is to be an actor shooting and working for only 3 months out of the year. You know, Chris Evans, I think you're great in the Captain America films, and you're a fantastic Captain America, but, you know, get some perspective. You'll be back acting. This is going to last as long as Julia Roberts' retirement. And you know, I got Chris Hemsworth, who's on the same schedule as you are with the number of Marvel movies, yet he was able to do Rush while you're doing movies like What's Your Number, which I kind of liked. Now it's time to move on, and let's do the DVD roundup. Couple things. First of all, the spotlight this week is on the X-Men trilogy on Blu-ray. You can get it for like $25 or $30 on Amazon. This is just the first three X-Men movies. I think you can get the big box set of all six. But the box sets are kind of silly at this point because they're just going to be adding them each year. But it's worth checking out because you're seeing very affordable box sets and they're loaded with special features. So if you haven't picked up the X-Men trilogy or you want to watch them all, like I said, $25 from Amazon, $25, $30, depending on, you know, the rate of the day. The ones that are coming out this week, we have The Wolf of Wall Street, which is, of course, Martin Scorsese's film starring Leonardo DiCaprio. Very interesting award film and made a lot of noise. It was very graphic in terms of sex and language, but a fantastic film worth seeing. Delivery Man was actually pretty good, too. This one stars Vince Vaughn as a guy who has, let's just say, made so many donations to a fertility clinic, and he ended up having hundreds of kids that he's now trying to reconnect with. Once you get past all the jokes about how the deposits happened, it's actually kind of a sweet little movie. The Great Beauty is an Italian film that was nominated for an Oscar. Very well shot, beautiful. It's for foreign films. You know, if you don't like foreign films, skip that one. Walking with Dinosaurs is an interesting one because it's such a fascinating, beautiful looking movie, and it's ruined by some really terrible dubbed voiceovers. But it's something the kids might like. There's also Veep season 2, from Showtime, Continuum Season 2, which is from the Sci-Fi Channel. Mystery Science Theater has another box set. You've got Californication Season 6 and The Chinese Zodiac, which is Jackie Chan directing his sort of action comeback about an elite team trying to steal back Chinese relics that have been stolen over the course of history. Stinker of the Week is Monster High, Frights Camera Action. It's the Monster High series. I mean, it's nothing really against it. It's for girls, but I'm just so tired of the girl-girl treatment of horror icons. It just really neuters them, so that's why it gets that. That's it. We are done talking movies. Next week, we got a whole bunch. We're going to be talking about Captain America, The Winter Soldier with soon-to-be-retired Chris Evans, Nymphomaniac Volume 2, and In the Blood. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.